everybody, and welcome to Android App Addicts, episode 449. I am your host, Mark, sometimes known as the Sultan of the Soapbox Cockerel, and this is the show where we talk about Android apps, Android hardware, and all sorts of other stuff. I am joined this week by the guy you're all here to see, let's be honest, the door-to-door geek, Mr. Steve McLaughlin. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Well, when people asked me that earlier this week in meetings, my only response was, well, I'm soberer.
Okay.
Cause I went to a, Linux conference, and one of the traditions at a Linux conference, for me at least, seems to be, let's see if I can do my talk completely, sober, or can I make it to my talk completely sober? And sometimes I'm not very successful.
All right. Well, how did it go? Do you think it went well?
Well, I'll give a brief summary here. It cannot be the best conference I ever went to because certain people were absent. There was no Cody Cooper. There was no Tracy Holtz. There was no Jonathan Adu. There was no Steve Cherbino. So there's a lot of people absent. With all that said, I was shocked at how well everything went. I had a vendor table in the vendor area kind of thing with about maybe 30 other tables. Multiple people told me my table was by far the most popular table, with the most people at it and with the most interactions with the people. I had all my mini computers on the table to basically publicly show my addiction to all, and had a whole lot of questions, a whole lot of interactions. And then when I was... And then if they talked to me for more than 2 or 3 minutes, I would then drop them the Iggy. Well, after my talk, my plan is to give away 40%+ of all these mini computers. Really, it's just so I can go buy more computers. I went to do my talk, standing room only, packed room. And again, in typical underpreparedness, I had maybe 20 minutes worth of slides. I was supposed to go an hour. So then I like ad-libbed another 15 minutes, 20 minutes or so. And then I took questions from the audience, which filled up at least another 20 minutes. So then with time running out, I told everybody, okay, everybody who wants a computer, go into the hall and then I'll hand them out. So I sat there for nearly an hour answering questions and giving out my babies, my children. I gave away more than I intended to give away. It to a degree hurt, but... I believe I sent them all to good homes.
You know, that's the thing I've known about you over the years, that you are a giver. And you know, God bless you for doing it, but now you got to it's going to cost you a fortune to replace all these, cuz you know you're going to.
Well, okay. This is why I don't have a server addiction, because to replace all of them would have been $30,000-$40,000. But because they're mini computers, and some of them literally were $5, $8, $10, $15, it's not going to cost a fortune. It's not even going to cost a small fortune. At the most, it's going to cost $200 to $300. At absolute most. That's a cheap Chromebook. But I will say I'm now tempted to contact somebody like a Maradroid and say, look, partially sponsor my event. What would normally cost $400, I'll give you $100. Give me $400 worth, and I'll give them all away at the conference. And I'll, you know, say you're officially sponsoring my talk or something, because I really like the idea of somebody coming to me, telling me what they want to do, me handing them something and saying, "Okay, download this, look for this, questions, email me." And I've already had like 4 people email me asking me questions from the talk, which I think is awesome. Because the name of my talk, I believe, was a little bit comical, but I do think holds a lot of merit, which is, I believe pies are the future. In fact, the longest running quote unquote Linux podcast in the verse, the Linux Link Tech Show, just had a major catastrophe a week ago. The guy's basement flooded, lost multiple servers, multiple desktops, and a laptop. And he wasn't sure how to get everything back and running in time to do the show. He got shipped 2 Raspberry Pis, and he has the Mumble server on it, the streaming server on it, the website running off of it, the mail server running off of it, chat server running off of it and like something else. And he's like, I cannot believe this. I come down to my basement and it's quiet. It's like eerie quiet. And yet everything's up and running. So to me, that was he didn't even realize it, a testament to the true functionality of these mini board computers.
Yeah, I know we're not talking about mini PCs. You have a whole other show for that. You should check it out, people. But just yesterday, at my day job, I was talking with a tech at a mutual client. So, you know, it's my client and the tech's client. And we were talking about a solution that required an automated SFTP to a secure server because, you know, for all kinds of reasons, we don't let stuff go straight to our stuff. And he was talking about how, you know, he didn't want to pollute the Windows domain controller by putting a server on it, didn't want to have another machine. I said, dude, I got a Raspberry Pi in the truck. Let's just go get this and knock it out right now. Let's just go. Yeah. And of course, he wasn't interested. But that old school thinking of this is the way things are always done, this is changing because we now have what 10 years ago were servers, you know, in our pockets that run fanless off a USB stick, you know.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing. And one of the things I said in my talk, which I do think is the truth, period. All of the mini computer success, and by that to the masses, it's Raspberry Pi, which just sold their 10th million device. They really do owe all of their success to the popularity and the mass appeal of smartphones. Smartphones are made in such bulk, even the ones that don't explode, they're made in such bulk that they drive down the cost to actually create these things. Thus, we're able to now send up satellites to space that used to cost $100,000 that now cost $10,000. And because of the popularity of these phones and because manufacturing has came down so far, we have literally mini computers about the size of 3 or 4 stamps out there that are quad core mini computers with 512 megs of RAM, Ethernet ports on it for $8.
Yeah, that's the reason, you know, if you're like me and you're trying to fly the whole quad thing, get into that world. Same thing. Accelerometers and those things are so cheap now because we all have 5 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's only going to keep going. And like mini computers didn't start with the Raspberry Pi. That was the other point of my talk. My first mini computer was what's called a Zipit Z2, which came out on the market in 2006. And it is truly a mini computer. And we still had them before that. Now they're just becoming cheaper, more powerful, and easier to use, easier to set up, easier to make do what you want them to do.
It's a whole new
but
world.
Yes, I do have a whole other show, but obviously it bleeds into the rest of my life.
Right, because, you know, Android, by definition, is mini computers.
Yes, and Android bleeds into everything else, right, too. I mean, because I am surrounded by it. It is my now maybe most popular OS that I run, because I do run Debian, I do run Ubuntu, I do run Raspbian, and all these other things, but so much of the activity is happening on Android, hardware and software related.
So I just wanted to, on that sort of similar vein, this week I had sort of a momentous, I don't know, reverse momentous, I pulled out of service my Android TV box because I found it to be not useful. I want, you know, a couple months ago, I was talking about looking at the best Android TV box on the market, the NVIDIA Shield, and maybe I still will be, but the little $40 AM Logic one that I've had for a couple of years now, I just found it to be too buggy and too underpowered to do the job. I don't want to say anytime, it was not uncommon. I don't use it. It was in the bedroom. I don't watch a lot of television there. But it was not uncommon, for whatever reason, I don't know what caused it, for me to come in and like all my Kodi settings are gone and have to reset up everything again.
That's not good.
And I mean, once is too much, but this happened 7 or 8 times over the course of a couple of years. And Amazon Prime didn't work well on it because Amazon Prime doesn't, you know, they don't want it to. Netflix didn't work well on it for codec issues. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. Some of the Google Play Video stuff would work, some of it didn't. I'm not blaming the hardware. I'm blaming licensing and DRM more than anything else. But I pulled that out of my home studio setup. Home video setup. I was just done with it. So as much as I believe that mini computers are going to be the way to go, and I am a big fan of Android, I'm not convinced that at least in the home theater setup, Android has a place right now.
I'll say it's still unbelievably difficult to beat the Roku.
Mm-hmm.
In simplicity, cost savings, and just, you know, performance. And it's because the OS is optimized for the hardware, and the hardware is optimized for the price. You know, that's its purpose. That is its only purpose. And most of the Android things, when you load them up the first time, you get stuff in the running in the background like Exchange, email, contacts. You don't want that crap. So it isn't properly optimized. That was the other thing in my talk. Hardware is only half of it. It literally is only half of the experience. The other half is software and how well optimized it is. We're still using the Odroid C2 upstairs as our Android experience. Netflix, good. YouTube, good. Kodi, we haven't had any issues with any blanket resettings, but I will say, did you install your Kodi from the Play Store or from Kodi.tv/download?
From the Play Store.
Okay, then that I'm going to take a blind, completely blind and deaf, dumb, and mute throw in the dark. I'd say that's the reason why you're having issues, because it will want to go upgrade at times on its own. For certain home theater type of things, I like to set it and forget it, the Ronco mentality. I don't care about security issues when it comes to that kind of thing. I just installed it straight from Kodi TV download, and it will not upgrade ever. Over my dead body kind of thing, out of my cold dead hands kind of thing. And I think that offers a little bit more stability, possibly. But speaking about like Android TV and stuff, I will say we had a Google announcement since the time we recorded last, and some of the things were not talked about, including the infamous Show Me $69 Android TV set-top box that people think for some reason a $69 1 gig of RAM box is going to be a good Android home TV experience, which I uncommonly doubt.
I'm not getting why that's getting so much good popular press. I don't see it.
It's one of those things people want to have this interactive set-top box next to their television set, I believe. But this is like your experience is the definition of it. This is such an extremely hard target to hit. And Google didn't talk about it at all. So the couple of things I'll ask you is, one, Samsung Galaxy Note 7. I will say I've said now for maybe a year, and it might be one of those things I'm making up in my mind, filling in fake memories, so I need you people to tell me if I'm wrong. But I could have swore I said at least a couple times on this show, Samsung only has one way to go, and that's down, because they were too popular. They were the Android handset manufacturer, and you only have one direction to go, down. Unfortunately, they're going down in an explosion. And of course, they're not going to go away completely, but they're definitely losing credibility.
True. But, you know, to be fair, it was a subcontractor for one component. It just happens to be the component that is the most dangerous.
Well, and then they sent out replacement, quote unquote, fixed units, and then they go boom too.
Right.
And then a text message was sent accidentally to the first guy who had the issue. It was accidentally sent to him, and it said something to the effect of, so do you think we should say anything or just see if this disappears? Something to that effect. Wow. Which, as a company, I would be surprised if they didn't think something like that.
Yeah, personally, I've never been a big fan of Samsung phones, not because of the hardware, but because of the software they put on them. I just don't like it. It's not that there's anything wrong with it necessarily. It just doesn't work the way my brain does.
I agree, and it's unconscionably heavy in my experience, and now with their Knox feature of security, I don't see myself going out of my way to buy a Samsung anything ever again. But of course, they make so many components, I'm going to be supporting them either way.
And you know, they could turn it around and be the premier hardware manufacturer next year.
No, I'm going to say it right now. No, they're dead. They're dead from being number one, just like Google took a dagger and just stuck it in their own heart with this Google announcement. If you take a look on the broad scheme of all these devices, all these phones, the idea of a $700 flagship phone is in the final scene. It's in the third act. It's going to be gone.
Yeah, the only way you can get away with that is with buy-in from the media.
The
cell phone companies
for carrier
subsidies,
and that's completely wrong as well. Please go take a look at the Honor 8. Please go take a look at the Mate 8. please go take a look at the OnePlus 3. Please go take a look at the ZTE Axon 7. There's a whole bunch of phones out there, and it's because hardware is becoming commoditized. It's becoming much cheaper to produce. The idea of a $400 to $500 flagship, quote-unquote, quality phone, which to me is a completely fictitious, made-up propaganda word, flagship phone. It's just an excuse for people to charge more money. You can get the near same quality, in some cases better quality hardware at less of a price. And I think the U.S. consumer market will be slow to realize that they're paying way too much for these devices. But in the next year and a half to 2 years, I do think the idea of $200 phones that are okay mid-range is going to be normal. And the idea of a almost $500 good phone will become the norm. The idea of a $700 phone, thankfully, is dying. And I have no problem saying that and putting money on it as well.
I would like to think you're right about that. I would like to agree with you, but I just don't think most people, I mean, this audience is not most people. You know, this audience is a more technologically savvy, more aware, you know, and probably more skinflint than the rest of the world. But, you know, my mom and the average soccer mom, they don't know about these third party, and they're not interested in knowing. They go to the AT&T store, or they go to the Verizon store, and they say, what phone is available?
And do you really think Samsung, do you really think Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile are paying $700 a phone?
Well, see, that's my point. It even though they may do the OnePlus 3, but they're still going to charge $700 for it.
No. Do you really think Verizon, Samsung, and all those are paying $750 or whatever each one of those phones?
But that's what I'm saying. Not. So the customer is still going to pay $700 a phone.
Well, no. What the manufacturers are going to figure out is we can make even more profit if we buy a phone for $400 and sell it for $550 to $600.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's all about profit, and it would be incompetent of them to their shareholders to not do something like that, is the way I look at it.
I think a little more long term. My problem is not with your sentiment, but your timeline. I think it's more like 10 years, but in 10 years, we won't be buying phones anymore. They'll be giving us a phone just to get us to use their service, in the same way that the cable companies give you a $500 DVR for using their service.
Yeah, they will be shoving a phone at us. Please take it. Yeah, and my time has always been off completely. What did I do, you know, 2 hours ago to 10 years ago? My timing is always off. I just, in my mind at least, in my mind's clock, it seems like a year, maybe two away. But now my question is, did you take a look at any of the other Google hardware offerings or hear the 20-minute spiel about AI being the future?
I have only read articles. I didn't delve into it because nothing I saw interested me, frankly.
Yeah, I'll say I never watched a live press event ever because I throw up in my mouth most of the time. I watched this one. The short of it is Google is the new Apple, period. Everything they make is white. You can color coordinate your stuff. It's extremely, most of the hardware, ridiculously overpriced. That Google Pixel phone is nothing special. There is nothing at all remotely close to special in that phone. The camera is supposedly good. Oh, great. But guess what? In 3 months, and 6 months, and 9 months, everybody's going to have that camera anyway. Are you, me, your mom, in a rush to get that kind of camera? I don't think so. I think the tech journalists are, but that's about it. Their wireless mesh solution, $300 for three little hockey puck mesh devices. I can get probably a little bit less money and get much higher quality, and tinfoil hat without having Google in my house.
Well, they're trying to compete with the Eero on that one. I think specifically brand for brand, that's who they're going after.
Eero isn't even the big player in this game. I have many techs who service many enterprises and businesses, and they tell me Eero's okay, but they're not the good one.
Right, but it's not for enterprise. It's for home, and the whole point is the home users want a couple of things. They want it to work primarily, and they want it to not be ugly. And so that's the market that Eero has gone after, and that's the market that Google is going after. They're going even more designer. You know, it's purple. It matches your flowers if you happen to have purple flowers.
Anybody who wants to put a home router on a coffee table deserves what they get, is what I'm going to say. This is not supposed to be a pretty device. This is a device that's in the corner away from people. It's not sitting in the middle of your coffee table. And if it is, there's something wrong with you as a person, period. That's all it is. There's something wrong with you. Now, the in-home device, Google Home device, I can picture that being more towards the center of the table. But that versus Amazon, the only difference is the price and the fact that the Amazon Echo uses Bing, which can't be good. But the Google Home thing looks okay. But if you notice, not even a inkling of a hint of the words IoT.
Right.
Which worries me. What the hell is a device for then? What does it do above and beyond my phone?
Nothing. It's Google now on your table.
Well, no. The only difference is it can push content directly to your Chromecast without having to click another button. That's the only difference. But yes, it is a fork of Google now. VR headset with covered in cloth. Really? You want to have a sweat stained VR headset? What the hell? I mean, VR is 3D televisions 3 years ago. I'm sticking with that. It's not going to hit the full stride. Maybe in 5 years, 10 years, but it's not time, I don't think. And to me, the biggest gripe I had about the whole event, Mark, is everybody's belligerent and, in my mind, nonsensical overuse of AI.
Right.
We do not have anything remotely close to AI. All we have is a voice-activated search engine. That's all it is. And it tries to wrap its answer in the form of an answer. Congratulations. It's not AI. There is no AI going on any of these devices. It's just indexed, highly indexed, and to be optimized for certain types of questions. Because if you go out of bounds of these certain type of questions, it crashes flat on its face.
Well, it's what I've talked about before. I definitely on my regular show, if not on this one, is we're simulating the smart home by using a large collection of dumb devices. We don't have a smart home. We have a bunch of dumb devices that work together to give the illusion of the smart home. And that's, you know, it's not AI in the devices. The AI is an emergent property of all the devices. And that's where the way I see Google is going after this. But AI is just the cool marketing term right now, just like HD was a few years ago. I have an HD right. Washing machine. Seriously, has right. HD on the label.
Right. And I mean, don't get me wrong. It's going to be one of those gray, blurry lines. When we cross it into actual AI, it's going to be somewhat hard to really see it. So I'm all in favor of calling it AI before it hits AI, but I am really, and I got sick to my stomach on that Google thing. And I'm sorry, Google is trying to position themselves to be the next Apple. I'm still going to support them. We're on YouTube right now, but I hope, my real hope is everything they did on that day basically will come crashing down and just cost them money, because the only thing I could see being semi-popular was the Google Home device. But I mean, they left people in the lurch with the On Hub.
True.
I mean, I don't see this going much further. I will say that. And there was no mention of the supposed Pixel 3 laptop that everyone was speculating about. There was no word of Andromeda OS, the combination of the two, which everybody was speculating about. So it was really, to me, a horrible sales pitch on the Google Pixel phones. And I'll say, what I can't understand is Jeff Jarvis, okay, a old, gray, battered journalist from decades ago, is the one saying out loud that the Pixel devices, I don't think, have anything special for Google Assistant. So why are they pitching it as a Pixel-only solution? How come nobody else is saying this? I mean, is Jeff Jarvis a genius and everybody else is an idiot? I don't understand this, because the whole thing is Google Assistant isn't even Google Assistant. You said it yourself already. It's Google Now.
Right.
That's all it is. So for them to try to say the only way you can get the full capabilities of Google Assistant from what everybody sees right now, and the guy in Australia who got his device accidentally a week early, it's just Google Now. So they can push all these ideas. They can push the hype machine to the end of the earth about these Pixel devices. The beautiful camera, exquisitely shaped, Google Assistant, AI is the future. But I don't see people jumping on board, nodding their head, drinking the Kool-Aid. No, no, I mean, Google Spaces, where's that? Oh, wait, nobody's using it. Google Duo, oh, wait, where's that? Oh, nobody's using it. Google Allo saw over a 1 million drop-off in usage in the week leading up to that Google event. I don't understand what they're doing, but they're obviously following one of the golden rules of Jeff Bezos from Amazon, fail fast. I think they're failing these things pretty fast.
Well, plain and simple, Google wants to make money, and right now their only business is advertising. Everything else they have is an add-on to that, and they're not making enough money to sustain the company. And the world is turning more and more antagonistic against advertising. I mean, what was the statistic I read recently? 75% of average users have an ad blocker installed. 75% of users can't agree on anything, but they all have an ad blocker. And so Google is trying to find something that makes money. And right now they don't know what it is. So they're trying to, their hardware is the new thing. So yeah, it is the Jeff Bezos thing. I mean, Jeff Bezos, Amazon still hasn't made money. You know, right. It's what, 15, 25, I don't know how many years old it is since it was a bookstore way back when, but they're still running, at least on the books, a net negative. So it's hard to make money even doing things that everybody loves.
Yeah, and even making successful devices like the Kindle, the Paperwhite, the Echo, the people that have all these devices do seem to love it. So they're buying it and they're happy with it. But it, yeah.
And so one thing Apple knows how to do is make money. So if you're going to try to make money, it's not such a bad thing to follow Apple's lead.
Well, I know, but this is what I don't understand. Well, okay. This is a personal anti-bias of mine. Google has the most PhD individuals in one company, one organization, one collective than any other thing in history. They also have the highest percentage of PhDs working for them than any company, any government, any organization in history. Yet they can't figure out how to make money. Maybe they need to start asking like the cleaning guy or something, because those PhDs, and sorry if you're one of those PhDs, they're not doing something right. Maybe it's like one of those, I understand calculus so much, I can't explain 2 + 2, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
If they brought back Google Hangouts and spent put a little improvements on it, I'd pay them $10 a month for it. I bet a lot of people would.
Google Voice, I would happily pay them something for each month. And yeah, I mean, stuff like YouTube Red. I am astonished. I am literally astonished at the number of people I meet who tell me they have YouTube Red as well. I went to OLF and literally 3/4 of the people said they had YouTube Red. I was in shock. I said, because when this started, I said, who in the hell would pay for YouTube videos?
And these are Linux guys. They don't pay for anything, right?
They don't pay for nothing. And yet almost everybody seems to be paying for YouTube Red. So somebody on their team has to be able to draw a graph with lines and colors, because maybe that's all they understand, showing the amount of income coming in directly from people and how it's real. It's real. It isn't make-believe. It isn't fictitious. It's real. And it's been going now for months. So maybe we need to do something like this. I don't know.
Just a thought.
I don't know. But hardware is hardware. The only constant is with hardware is if you wait to buy something, you can't go wrong.
Yes, that's true.
And if you buy right now, you could very possibly make a mistake.
Yeah, I didn't buy the Amazon Echo when it was offered pre-release. I don't regret that decision, but there have been times I thought, man, I should have tried that at $99. So sometimes it's good to get in early, sometimes not. But you're right. You almost never lose by waiting, because you get the same thing cheaper later.
Well, and sometimes more optimized and more efficient and better looking and won't explode in your pocket.
I had an old boss who used to say, old as in former, and he was an old guy. He used to say, never be the first the new to try or the last the old to lay aside. Good words to live by.
Very, very good words. And I'm sorry, but we went 2 weeks, we're never without a show. So we had to extinguish that from our.
I want to start with an app, if I might. And this is an old app. It's nothing new, but there's a new feature to it. I've said so many times before, and so have you, Dor, if you like a thing, pay for it. because paying for it is how it comes to be. All right, I'm going to stop my soliloquy for just a moment about the app and say the same goes true for this show. If you like this show, pay for it. You can do that at Patreon. You can do that at podnuts.com, make a tip there. If you like something, pay for it. It's just the way to make sure it happens. All right, so this app that I envisioned a while back, now called Castback, now has a paid-for feature. What's the difference between the free and the paid? You paid for it. That's it. It's exactly the same thing. You don't get any bonuses. You don't get any jump ahead of the line. You don't get any free release. All you're getting is you're paying for it. Well, why would you do that when you can get the free one for free? Because if you want the guy to keep working on it, you're going to pay for it. Because he went to the guy who's been doing his graphic design and UI stuff and said, hey, I'm ready to start doing some new rounds of updates. And the dude was like, well, that was a fun project for a while. And that's what happens everywhere. I'm not blaming the other guy. That's the way that's the appropriate response for an adult to have. After a while, you say, well, that was fun for a while, but I'm not getting anything out of this. The fun is kind of gone. It's no longer fun. It's now work. If you want something, right, pay for it. So Castback in the Google Play app, get the premium, or what is there? I don't even know what they call it. It's paid version. Pro version is what they're calling it. Go get it if you enjoy Castback. And you should, really. You should try it. And it's $2, I think. I have to go look. I don't even remember. It's not much. It's not going to break anybody's bank. Even the poor college guy can afford it. If you like something, pay for it. Castback Pro.
Right. And even if you don't want to pay for it, download Google Opinion Rewards, get some free money, and buy it that way.
There you go.
I'm sure the guy who does the graphics said, you know, I'm really happy to help you. But you know, last week I took my girlfriend out to eat, and it was a nice place, and they had steak, and she was really happy. And when we were home, I was in really happy. So I need more of this thing called money once in a while.
It's a thing.
It's a very normal thing. I will say
Castback Premium. I'm sorry. What it's called. Castback Premium, and it's $1.99.
Yeah, it is definitely constantly getting better and more stable. Because if anybody's going to break anything, I got no problem with saying, I'm sorry, but I break everything. I was able to load 80 plus feeds, hit update. It always went through all of the feeds and got everything, where before it was once in a while having an issue going through all 80 feeds. It has gotten measurably more stable since 3 months ago or so. I believe we talked about it maybe 3 months ago. And it's the kind of thing I only see getting better. And I'm sorry to say, other developers need to at least acknowledge simplicity in UI. Complexity in UI typically takes the newest users to an application, and it really does push them away. The structure and layout of this UI, I think, is the kind of thing anybody can pick up and start to understand very quickly.
It's good stuff. That's all there is to it. All right, so Dor, I'm turning it over to you. What do you got for us?
Okay, first app I want to bring, I'm really bringing because we had the developer on, maybe now more than a year ago. The developer is called Brain and Brain. And I did have a guy also into the Google Plus community ask me to create a new group called Show Apps. So you could easily categorize and see, these are just apps people are talking about. Here's apps from the show. That was a great idea. But then somebody else said, why don't you also create a new category called Games? And then I thought, well, that means I'm going to have apps, games, show apps, and show games. But then I thought to myself, games aren't always games. And it can be game. I mean, it almost becomes a blurry line sometimes, like this Burly Men at Sea. It's under adventure, but when you play it, there's almost no gaming going on. It's a interactive story. There's not really many choices, because in games mean you can win, you can fail, you can die, you can lose, you can win, this was almost just an utterly elegantly presented. That's the whole thing. The presentation is half of the experience, and then there's the story behind it. This is the kind of thing I really do encourage people, at least go look at the YouTube videos for it. Then take a look at Brain and Brain and take a look and see if there's any other things that they make that you like, because I'm almost willing to say yes. And it's the kind of thing, if you want to, just keep an eye on it. It will go on sale. It is brand new still, so it will come down. It's just a question of when.
Yeah, 1,000 to 5,000 installs. Door brings you here first.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, I don't like overusing the word gorgeous. It's stinking gorgeous.
It's kind of a choose your own adventure thing from what it looks like. It's a storybook, but it's an interactive story.
There are things you don't have to do, like side things that aren't key, aren't important to the story, if you will. But when you don't gain really any by doing them, you just go talk to somebody and you hear something else kind of thing. It really is a, I don't want to say interactive story, because you have to push the story along. It's not like you're just following the story along. You're pushing the story along. It's almost a new genre kind of thing is what I think. Very interesting execution is the only thing I can say.
All right. And we have from our perennial contributor, Soham Bapat, he has an app he would like to bring to us as well. And I'll read that email that he sent to us. It says, "Hey guys, I would love to bring an app to this episode, even though I will, it will almost certainly have been covered. It's a music player app called Power Amp. It's nothing special, no cloud backup like GPM, but it certainly is a solid music player. If you have any offline music, then I truly recommend using the presets in the app. Even with my cheap $15 Bluetooth headphones, I could boost the bass up using the bass dial to what it should have been, giving a good sound listening experience. I believe that you do have a free trial for 14 days, and it's $3.99 to unlock the pro version. I had an extra Google Play credit, so I bought it immediately after listening to it once. It really makes a huge difference. Keep up the great work, Soham."
Yeah, I will say Power Amp episode 120. So yes, it was brought before, but a long time ago. I am a fan of customizing your audio, especially if I could hear the differences, but you know, my ears are kind of like lead, so I don't really hear the difference. But yeah, it's definitely one of those, it's one of those apps that has been around a very, very long time, but it has grown, it has changed, and it has gotten better. So I do encourage you guys to check it out if you want to, you know, increase the bass, the mids, the highs, set predefined EQ, you know, sets. So for rock, for podcasts, for everything else. I'll say the people that like this app has always really liked this app.
And it's been around a while. The last update was September 3rd, 2016. So it's not, it's in current updates, but it has over 50 million installs. So a lot of people using this thing.
Wow. Over a million reviews, 4.5. That's hard to come by. Wow.
Yeah, it's 789,499 five-star reviews.
That's insane. That's just insane. Okay, and really quick, Mark, here's the other reason why I didn't want to make the category called games. I'm the one that has to do all this live during the show.
Yes.
So I'm not trying to complain. Every time I have to devote brain cycles to figuring out something else on the fly, the less brain cycles I devote to Mark and the more I sound like I'm almost ignoring him, which I don't want to do.
All right. So here's my suggestion right now off the top of my head. Google Play uses, can utilize hashtags. So you throw them out there in the show apps and let the listeners hashtag what they are. So it may be a game. It may be a story. It may be interactive. It could be all those things. And then the users then go and add the hashtags to whatever they want to. And Bob's your uncle. You've got categories without you having to do it.
To the comments?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So they just put a hashtag in the comments. And then when you're searching in that community for a hashtag, you get all the things that are tagged.
That'll do it. Very cool. And I don't know if you ever used Cloud Magic, Mark. Did you ever use Cloud Magic?
I don't believe I did.
Okay. Cloud Magic was one of those email applications that, to me, had a very good combination of simplicity in how it looked, and its functionality was really good. It even, here's the main thing I liked. I understand what I can do with Root, okay? I understand completely what I can do with Root, but I like being able to suggest things to other people and not have to worry about saying, do you have Root?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not good. Cloud Magic used to enable you to connect to a ActiveSync or Exchange server for email and for email and calendaring, and not ask for admin access. Most apps to connect to Exchange want to have admin access over the device so they can nuke and pave it, so they can wipe it whenever they see fit, and also to force you to put in a pattern lock or a some sort of lock screen. I don't like that at all. Cloud Magic was then bought, and now it's changed its names to Newton. There's a stupid subscribe now on the top of your emails telling you, and I've had multiple emails with this company. They said the only way to get rid of it is to pay them, I think it was $50 a year. So, thank you for all the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Peace out. Love, peace, and hair grease. I'm outie. No, I don't play that. So I've been looking at this one. I can't remember the guy's name. I want to say he's German or Dutch, which I'm so Americanized ignorant, I can't tell the difference. Morton, I believe, was his name, possibly, in Google Plus. This is the app he told me to take a look at. It is called Email Exchange Plus Mail by MailWise. Not a good name. But it does enable you to connect to Exchange for calendar and or email and not demand admin access to your device. I literally just started using this. Their interface is very simple and clean. And to me, that's a very important thing. I don't want to have to stop and think when I'm, you know, checking emails at work, or stop and think, you know, what am I doing kind of thing. And it has a very simple feature. Your emails have the same kind of icon thing happening there. You can slide, you can search, you can filter. So this is the email I'm going to try to use to replace Newton email. I don't know. I just need something else because I'm not paying them $50 and I don't like literally 15% of my screen being occupied with a ad.
So, Dor, would you do it if it was $15 one time? $50, not $15?
No. Okay. And it's because I don't believe in the one-time pay model for software, period. If they're going to tell me the software will work forever and it will never need upgrading, and then I'll happily pay $15. But for a company to stay in business, I have to pay them a reoccurring revenue one shapeware form. And I said, I don't know if you guys understand economics, and I don't understand if you understand the price of a dollar, because it sounds like you're not even in America. And they weren't, because me looking at the mail header IP address, I got three emails from their company. None of them was inside of this country. $50 a year is staggering. Mm-hmm. When I can go and get Gmail for free. Your features are not worth, I don't know if there is features in email that's worth $50 a year. I can understand $8 a year, $10 a year, maybe $15 a year, $1 a month, but $50 a year? And they basically just said, nope, that's what we decided to do. Oh, I guess you like losing customers then, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's not that they're losing anything. You didn't pay them anything in the first place. So there's no lost revenue to them if you walk away.
Well, so I have to believe Cloud Magic did what a lot of companies try to do, which is just get popular, just get eyeballs, then cash in, sell off to somebody else.
Right.
I don't know. But
I mean, lots of apps are you know, $5 one time or $3 one time. In fact, for my work mail, I use an app to connect to it that I paid $5 for one time. And that's fine with me. Those I don't mind. But recurring monthly anythings, I don't like. Unless it's new, fresh content like Netflix, I don't mind paying them $20 a month because it's something new every month. But the same thing, getting the same service over and over again, I don't like that. Something about it just doesn't work for me.
Well, I can't say I disagree with you. What the logic loop that happens in my head is I use LastPass. I'm willing to pay $1 a month for that. So I'm willing to pay $1 a month, I think, for a lot of things,
right,
because it's only $1 a month. That doesn't mean anybody else has to. But $50 a year, oh, you better be doing a lot for me. You know what I mean? Like with Netflix, you can, if you want to, watch, you know, 30 hours of stuff you've never seen before a week.
Right.
And they don't care, you know. But yeah, so I'm trying other things. If you out there know of a good email client, and even if all it does is Exchange and I have to have two email apps running, I don't care. If you know of a good, solid Exchange, because unfortunately that's what they use at work, 365 Exchange Active Sync type service that does not want admin access on your device and with calendar notifications, because me, meetings, memory, not good, need those notifications. Yeah, so I'm going to try this one, but I encourage people, please tell me if there's something else that I'm missing.
All right. Let's see. I'm just... I don't even remember. You mentioned subscriptions. I pay Dropbox a fee every year, and it's a hundred-ish a year for my terabyte of storage. And I don't blink at that. So there are things I'll pay for. For some reason, it's just apps. I guess I don't get enough value out of it. And that mail app, you obviously didn't get enough value out of it. If I get $50 a year worth of value out of something, I have no problem paying for it. But it's their price to the value ratio was just way out of line for you. Here's a thing that you've been happy with their free service, and you might have been okay with $1 a month, but to say $50 annually, that's just too much sticker shock. And it's not that the price was the problem. I'm speaking for you, but you can correct me. I don't think it's the price is the problem. It's the value for the price. If somebody gives you $50 worth of value, then you'll pay for it. I know you. You pay for stuff all the time, but it has to be a worthwhile purchase.
Right. And it is the shell shock difference of free to 50. If it was already $35 a month, I mean, a year, and then they said 50, it wouldn't be as bad.
Right.
You know, it'd be more digestible, more palatable. But that to me was just too much of a jump.
It goes back to the hardware discussion we were having earlier. The $700 Android phones aren't $200 better than a $500 Android phone. They're just prettier.
And honestly, a lot of the phone experience is subjective, not objective, right? Where it's personal experience defines true value. You can compare specs all day long, but it really is difficult to say with absolute certainty a $700 phone is not worth $700. I just think if you show somebody a phone and say this was $400, they'll say, what? You know, after playing with it for a couple minutes, what? And I say, yeah, and it has 6 gigs of RAM, more RAM than your phone. And, you know, pretty snappy, huh? Yeah.
Of course, research has shown over and over again that the more people pay for something, the happier they are with it. That's just a truism. That's why Mac people love their Macs, because they paid $1,600 for that laptop, and they better dang well like it.
Until, of course, it gets infected with malware, then they get really mad.
All right, so I think we have another email that I can read from Aaron. Aaron offers an app called Paper Planes by Active Theory. It's a simple app where you fold, in quotes, a paper plane from a piece of paper. I lost my own train of thought. Where you fold a paper plane from a piece of paper with your location on it and throw it, in quotes, into the sky. Then you catch planes thrown by others to see where they're from and add to your own location to the plane before throwing it again. It's a simple and interesting, more like a lab idea than a real game. Thanks for the great work, guys. My time is currently being sucked down by Brain It On, which Dore brought in episode 382, and Magnetic Balls from a couple of weeks ago. That one has sucked away much of my life as well. That was me saying, not him.
Yeah, this is the app that Eric brought, and I don't know if Eric was stimulated by the email to bring the app or not, but this was a really unique idea with the pretty colors. You do the motion of like you're throwing your phone as a plane, and then you do the motion of like a net to capture a plane, and you can see how far your plane's gone throughout the world kind of thing. Very different.
It's like a Facebook, see how far this pace, the post can travel thing, but with paper. I apologize. I was out that week, I guess. I didn't know you'd done that one.
Gotcha. It's one of those great ideas just because of its uniqueness is what I'll say, just because it was different. But it's one of those apps I do think that when you install, you'll play with a couple minutes and then, that's a novelty. Well, let me show somebody this app and then, not use it for yourself really ever again.
All right. What's your next app for us, Mr. Geek? Is it okay if I call you Mr. Geek? It's a little formal, I know.
Just don't call me late for dinner. this app I literally wanted to bring specifically with you here only, and it isn't because you need it or you want it, but I think this is the kind of thing that you might be able to appreciate more than just the average fella. It's called Chess and Mate. And what this really is, this is an interactive application to help encourage really kids, but anybody who doesn't know how to play chess. What are the rules of chess? What are the basics of chess? What are the techniques in chess? And then it basically takes you through some basic games or some situations in chess. My son has showed an interest repetitively in chess, and when I sit down and try to explain it to him, he will get upset. I'll just say that. So I wasn't able to really teach him too much about it, just some of the basics, and then he was like, squirrel, and then ran away from me. So I gave him this app maybe a week ago, And he definitely seems like he knows more about chess. I haven't sat down with him yet because he's only doing it, you know, when he remembers to look at it kind of thing. But I think it's one of those things. I like teaching kids in interactive modes, if you will. So I thought this was pretty cool. It costs $199 to buy a top developer, quote unquote, 222 reviews with 4.4 rating. Honestly, to have a teaching chess game cost $2 and still get that many reviews and downloads, I think says something.
And you get to play. So it's not just a tutorial. You can play against other people using the app. So it's a win-win.
Yeah. It's just one of those things I just thought was really cool, really different. Somebody trying to do something different besides just the same old.
It's been around a while. So the last update was August of 2015, and it has fewer than 5,000 installs. So it didn't exactly just zoom off the starting line, but it does seem interesting to me.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was cool.
To the people who listening, there were a couple of you who started playing chess against me in the Chess Time app after I brought it up. And I apologize for totally falling off the face of the planet on that. My time just got away from me. And quite frankly, it's demoralizing to get beat every time you play. So it's a little of both. You know, one thing is I suck, and the other is I ran out of time. But nothing personal. Sorry about that. I do have in my new man cave, I unpacked something that I packed away literally 12 or 13 years ago when my first daughter was old enough to break it. And I had to glue a piece back together. I have a hand-carved onyx chess set where the pieces are black onyx and white onyx, and the board is hand-carved and hand-inlaid pieces. And my then 10-ish, 11-ish month-old, just-learning-to-walk daughter broke a piece, and it's been in storage ever since. So I pulled it out, and now it's out sitting on the table, and it's all pretty. But I have nobody here who can play me because nobody, not only do they not know how, they don't have any interest in learning.
Right. Well, I feel you. But let me just throw this out there, Mark. Maybe there could be something more than just the opportunity to lose that could be given to you. Maybe, and we'll only entertain this idea if we get genuine positive feedback. What if we set up a Patreon thing that said, if you pledge X, you will then have the opportunity to beat Mark in chess.
I like it. I have no ego. That's not a problem. Yeah, I can lose to. Yeah, so $5 a month, and I'll let you beat me regularly.
Right, and you're guaranteed, and me too. Me too. I'll throw my name up there. So I'll say every month you have the opportunity to play like one game or whatever against me or Mark and just beat the crap out of us because I'm not quite very good. I'm not trying to proclaim I'm not good. So there you go. Well, and if you guys tell us you want it, we'll make it happen. I'm not going to go through the time of setting everything up in Patreon to have nobody do it.
That would be funny, though.
It would be.
I picked up chess at the hand of my grandfather when I was about 9. I've been playing off and on that long. My children are now 7, 12, and 14, or 8, excuse me, 8, 12, and 14, and I can't get any of them to have any interest in it. So I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's just a personality thing. You either like it or you don't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because there's people who like checkers, people who like chess, the two shall never meet.
That's true, because I don't like checkers much.
Yeah. Now let's go from something wholesome, learning, really, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, was actually invented to help convey teaching and understanding of war itself was chess.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay, even if it's fictitious, I don't care. Let's just roll with it. We're going to go from that level of intelligence to something completely different. This, I believe, used to be a game on possibly PlayStation 2 or 3, maybe. I can't even remember anymore. Called Carmageddon. Mature 17 plus rating, period. Can't put it any other way. Not kid friendly whatsoever. But here's the real reason why I wanted to bring it up. A lot of the people who like this game are mad. They are really, truly mad. Because the game went from a paid model to a free model. But then now there's in-app purchases. So if you bought the game before, you have what everyone else has because now everything extra costs money. So if you really like the game and want everything, now you're going to end up paying even more money. So a lot of people are very upset at this. I will say it's a popular game. no matter what, and it's going to make money still, no matter what, and it's still going to be popular, no matter what, and people are just going to have to be butthurt and get over it, because that's the price of, you know, being in this ecosystem of buying these games with the idea of these in-app purchases, downloadable content taking over the industry. So if you like running over people and seeing blood fly everywhere or something like that, well, then you're going to have to get yourself some Carmageddon.
It's a shame Eric isn't here for this, because this has Eric's name. It says right there on the thing, Carmageddon. Eric would love this right there in the show title.
I know, but it's the kind of thing I held off a week already. I can't hold off no more. It just had to happen.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this game, but just from watching the video, it looks like it's a port of an old game, right, like you mentioned. And that just goes back to our previous conversation. What used to be high-end, purpose-built hardware now can go on, yeah, pretty much any phone. Let's see. I'm going to look at my app list. It is compatible with every one of my devices, all the way down to the old Asus Transformer.
Wow.
So that's pretty amazing. That essentially, my old Asus Transformer is, able to do what purpose-built hardware did just a few years ago.
Crazy. Literally crazy. Yeah, and it's this kind of game. I didn't buy it. I'm not going to buy it. I'm a retro guy. To me, there's too many other things out there that are just as good or better. Okay, I want to get away from games for at least an app or two, Mark, because we have to. It's like written in our regulations of the show. This app, very mixed signals from when I first looked at this. It's called Fingbox, Fingbox. And the X looks almost like a Dropbox symbol.
It does.
So I was really confused about what in the hell is going on here. It's made by Domaz Ltd. I'm going to go with that.
Limited.
Limited, yeah. They made the app called Fing, F-I-N-G, network tool, which was very popular, very powerful, very functional, very versatile, and to be quite honest, I thought very ugly. It was not appealing to the eye kind of thing. This app is trying to do some of that functionality and more, but making it also look very pleasing to the eye is what I'm going to say. It allows you to isolate, categorize, and digitally interrogate devices on your network, whether it be smart TVs, printers, Nest thermostats, and with some of these devices interact with them, like the Nest thermostat, Sonos, Philips Hue. And there is some interaction with TiVo that I don't completely understand yet. But I highly encourage you, if you like going over your network and digitally interrogating things and doing some IoT type things, I will encourage you guys to check out Fingbox, Fingbox.
All right. I'm looking at their website. This looks like just part of their overall ecosystem. I don't know how much functionality it has. I have installed it. I will be letting you know, because it definitely seems interesting to me, but it looks like you may have to have their home stuff in order for the app to work. And it's £5 a month for their service.
So that would be like $7 a month?
Ish. Yes.
Yeah. I hope it makes coffee really good.
There is a download, but it may be a feature limited download. I honestly don't know. But they've got desktop, they've got Windows, OS X, Linux, and even a Raspberry Pi version. So something to check out. Installed, we'll see what it looks like. It's either new, October 2016, and it's got less than 1,000 downloads. So
it's definitely newer, and because of the popularity of the other app, I don't expect this to not get some level of popularity here pretty quick. You know, I said that backwards, I almost confused myself. Okay, so something that exploratory, IoT related, to something I wouldn't encourage most average people to go out and install or download or look at, and it's the website testingcatalog.com. This, to me, was a great site to go to see all the applications or all of the what they claim higher quality applications in Google Play that are in testing or beta mode kind of thing. So if you like experiencing and witnessing new things, this is the site you need to go. So the next time your other podcast you listen to about Android apps complain about how unbelievably difficult it is to find things, this is something else you can tell them. Go check out testingcatalog.com, and you elitist journalist people can have the in to what isn't even out yet to all the normal folk. Make them feel like they're special. You know, I thought this was actually pretty cool. I did find some really interesting apps in here. I did also find some really craptastic apps in here. But, you know, just like the theme song said when we were kids, Mark, you take the good, you take the bad.
You take them both, and there you have.
The facts of life. Exactly. So I thought that was, if anything, a fun site to experience and just check out, see what kind of things were possible.
So while you were talking there, I opened up the Fingbox app on my Android phone, and the first screen has two buttons. I have a Fingbox. I don't have a Fingbox. So if you say, I don't have a Fingbox, it takes you to where you can sign up for the Kickstarter. If you say, I have a Fingbox, it says, now let's hook up your Fingbox. So this app is specific to another piece of hardware on your LAN.
Okay. I'll check out and see if it's Raspberry Pi installable, fully functional, even though I gave away my last Raspberry Pi.
Wow. That's, well, you can get another one in a day with Amazon Prime.
Indeed. Yeah, so I'll definitely check that out. And I'll report back if it is. If I never mention it again, that means it didn't work.
So before we go any further with another app, I just want to shout out to two recent Patreon pledgers, Christian, I won't say your last names because I don't know if you want me to or not, and Mark, both pledged, made monthly pledges of support on Patreon. You're stand-up guys, rock stars in every way. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Christian just retired recently, and went through some financial roller coaster, which is to be expected. So the pledge you see from him is a return to pledging. I believe he was one of the first pledgers.
That's awesome. And it's just, there's just no excuse for not. I'm sorry. I keep harping on this, but, you know, a buck, you can all afford a buck a month. I don't care who you are. You can.
And if you can't afford a buck a month, talk to me, contact me. I'll help you earn money because everyone out there has to be able to do something for somebody that's worth more than a buck a month.
And maybe you don't trust Patreon. You don't want to give somebody a credit card. You don't trust the man. You know, Dore takes Bitcoins, I'm sure. If he doesn't, I do, and I'll send them on to him. So, you know.
I kept telling myself I was going to set up a Bitcoin donation thing. And then, I don't know.
I have a listener who sends me 0.0005 Bitcoins every time a show comes out, which is roughly 30 cents. Good on you, man. I'm totally fine with 30 cents.
Well, and if you leave it for your great grandkids, it might be $50,000 a piece.
Could be. Something.
Yeah. Okay. I got to bring this app just because I have to. It's like one of those things, one of my agreements I made with some invisible thing that doesn't actually exist. Lego, again, coming out with the highest of the high quality kids apps. Again. No video in the store. So,
must be a great quality. Game.
Must be. $4.99. So, it's also not cheap. Lego Harry Potter years 1 through 4. There are so many Harry Potter fans out there. I feel insulting saying, if you're a Harry Potter fan, because they're every freaking where. You can basically get this game, design your own student, go through Hogwarts, and experience everything in Hogwarts for the first 4 years, which I believe was the first 3 books.
Couldn't tell you.
I can't tell you either. I'm guessing. Bottom line, if you have a child that's into Harry Potter, I can guarantee you get them this game, you put it on their device, you lead them through a first couple minutes of it, and then you walk away. Put your hands up and just walk away. Because the kid will take care of the rest. It's Lego. It's a game. It's Harry Potter. It's hard to go wrong.
I have sitting now in my Audible library the first Harry Potter book. I've never read any of them. I've only seen the first movie. I've decided to take the plunge and give it a try. I'll either love it or I'll hate it. I don't know. Sometimes I'm blah about things. But I expect that this will be something I love or hate. And so I'll let you know. But so far, I'm completely ignorant about the Harry Potter universe.
I've seen the movies because I have to, because my wife is the kind of person who when the last book came out, at least, she went to the bookstore 11 o'clock at night with Harry Potter glasses and like a cape on to go get the book. And I still love her.
Well, let's face it, Dora, you couldn't do any better.
Yeah. I'm surprised I got anything. I digress. I'm going to now just throw out a couple quickies because we are going long already, which I hate saying, and I just said it. First one is Solar Walk 2 Space Exploration. E for everyone, does have some kind of in-app purchase, does cost 99 cents. But if you're especially teaching a kid or you yourself just want to learn more about the local solar system in space in dramatically beautiful fashion is what I'm going to say. It is not ridiculously real, but it is good-looking graphics. Of course, it can't be real because, you know, we don't have all these images immediately available to us, like close-up of, you know, Saturn or whatever. But really cool imagery, really cool artwork, takes you through the solar system, explains to you about the planets, about all of the moons. Really fun is what I'm going to say. Really fun app. And again, only 99 cents. This is the kind of app I just love throwing towards a kid and just seeing what they come back with. Because my youngest one came back with, do you know, Dad, that there's more than one planet that has rings around it? Yes, I do know this, son. I thought that was awesome.
But he knows now. That's the thing.
And he, yeah, exactly. And that's the whole thing. I would love it if my kid, once or twice a school year, can shock a teacher with something that they already know. I don't expect them to know everything, but just once or twice a year, just shock a teacher here and there. I'm going to bring up, I don't even know how to verbalize this. Hokey is the only word I can come up. Game. But here's the gimmick. These simulator games are getting a lot of traction. Get it? Traction?
See what
this
you
is
did
Arctic. This is called Arctic Trucker Simulator, a.k.a. Ice Road Truckers. Again, no video in the Play Store. I've had two people that I never knew love the idea of trucking simulators, who are not truckers themselves, who pinged me and said, Dor, this game is awesome. I'm like, excuse me? They said, yeah, you know, don't look at the pictures too much in the Play Store and put too much weight on them, because some of them don't look very good. But I'm going to tell you, this is a great simulator. And you can actually, you know, drive around highways, load up, go unload. I'm going to tell you right now, this is the kind of thing where they both said you could easily lose 6 hours straight playing it just because, you know, you're hauling loads.
This thing has less than 500 installs and 18 reviews. Door bringing you the hottest and freshest.
Yeah, updated October 4th. I do believe it came out less than like 15, 20 days ago. So yeah, this is one of the things that I just think is going to become more popular, just a question of when. And the last two I'm going to throw out are games that are basically reminiscent of other games. We had Monument Valley, utterly popular, ridiculously popular. This is like it to me, just as graphically pleasing and just as complex pleasing in the puzzle aspect of it. I believe it's called Mechorama by Martin Magni. 183,000 reviews on this thing. 4.7 reviews. And it's the same people that made, and I brought this app before, Odd Bot Out, which has a little bit of the same physics going on, but completely different gameplay. Gorgeous game. Basically, rotate the whole puzzle platform, spin it around, tap where you want to go, figure out puzzles, get to the goal at the end of the puzzle. Simple, fun. This is perfect waiting in line type game as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that looks great.
Yeah, but it is like Monument Valley, so if you're a fan of that style of game, I will encourage you to check this game out. And the last game, this is another game I had to bring just because of you, Mark. Lunar Lander. We've seen all kinds of variants starting in 77 or whatever with Lunar Lander. This one is called Mars Mars. I don't know if that's an ingenious name or a stupid name, but it's called Mars: Mars by Homolio games. 60,000 reviews, 4.6 average rating, between 1 million and 5,000 installs. This was also the kind of game you could easily just play while you're waiting in line. No video again in the store. Good. This was one of the games that I can say the Lunar Lander type, but actually had, I thought, good controls. Just two controls is all you got, which is left and right. Shoot left and shoot right. And if you hit it when you were going up, it would make you go up higher. And if you hit it when you're coming down, it will slow down your ascent so you wouldn't crash hard. It was easy to crash too fast, but also the same token, it was not hard to hit the pad. Very limited fuel. When you would take off to jump, you could see where you were going to land almost every time because the screen would zoom in or out. You would not have a lot of fuel to play around on any jump. So I liked how you had to be efficient. And then there's bonus spots. Like very quickly into the game, there's a selfie place where if you hit the spot in the air when you're jumping, you tap the screen and you'll take a selfie of yourself, of your character in the game. Then there's other spots where if you hit that spot, you get bonus points. You can have other people come join you on Mars. Then you take control of them. So different character looking with different environments. So it's more than just Lunar Lander. You also can get points, get other environments, get other characters, and change them around. The platforms always are in the same spot, but you can have different environments going forward. But, I mean, 780, I think, is the highest number I see of the platforms in the screenshots. So there's a lot of platforms to go through.
I really like the write-up, the description of it. It gives a sense of the personality of the game. Mars Corp is ready to take the first group of volunteers on an exciting mission to Mars. Fly around Mars in one of our brand new jetpacks and discover what's out there. As a part of the Put a Human on Mars No Matter What program, we're proud to announce that Mars Corp is the first company cutting enough corners to make human flights to Mars finally viable. That's good stuff.
That is. It's a good pitch. And let me just do a quick little looky, Mark, and go tab. I'm going to bring one more out there, and I want to just throw out there a oddball thing, and that is, in the coming weeks, board games being brought onto Android seems to be obsessively popular. It is happening all over the place. So expect everybody to be talking about board games on Android, including Catan, which is the Settler of Catan ripoff, and a whole bunch of other ones. But what I want to bring lastly is not a game, and I haven't had a chance to completely play with it, but it's called Audiophonic Edit. You load it up, you get a free 30-day thing. After that, it costs money. It tries to be your professional-like recording and editing studio for audio on Android. So I got interested in it. You can export into uncompressed WAV or AAC format. I like being able to export native audio in WAV because, you know, you don't want to ever transcode down or up. You always want to go, whenever you have to transcode down, but only, you know, minimal transcode. I hope to have time to play with this. I don't know if I will, but I hope I will. You can also share your end result files with YouTube, SoundCloud, Podlove, Publisher, Spreaker, Libsyn, Blueberry, Archive.org, Dropbox, SFTP, FTP, HTTP, Google Drive, WebDAV, Amazon S3, etc., etc. So it really does try to be your complete solution to record, edit, and push audio out.
And of course, my favorite review from Matt Foster is gay. I'm sure it probably does everything that it says. It's just too complicated. Ain't nobody got time for that. And I want to ask you down there, Keith Morris, are you the singer from the Circle Jerks? If you are, right on, man. Wild in the streets.
Wow.
I got nothing to say to that.
Yeah, I have no words.
All right, so let's wrap it up right there then. That will be the grand finale that ends the show. Let's go through the list of apps. Castback Premium by QMS Applications. Burly Men at Sea by Brain and Brain Adventure. Power Amp Music Player by Max MP Music and Audio. Exchange Mail Plus by MailWise. Paper Planes by Active Theory LLC. Chess and Mate by Tivola Board Brain Games. Carmageddon by Stainless Steel Limited Action Games. Fingbox by Domots Limited Tools. and not really an app, testingcatalog.com. Lego Harry Potter Years 1 through 4 by Warner Brothers Entertainment, International Enterprises Adventure. Solar Walk 2 Space Exploration by Vito Technologies. Arctic Trucker Simulator by UIG Mobile. Mikorama by Martin Mengi. Mars Mars by Pomelo Games. And Auphonic by Auphonic. So there you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Apps, good and true. We may have been gone a week, but we made up for it tonight, I gotta say.
That's what we do, you know. And if you don't like it, go listen to somebody else.
And do that. In fact, it doesn't have to be an either or. You can listen to somebody else and listen to us.
Well, yeah, because that's the whole thing. And I did mention this at OLF to a couple podcasters. Anybody who believes podcasters compete with podcasters, to me, are the scum of the earth. Because there's more than enough people listening, and there's more than enough time in the day for people to subscribe to nearly mass numbers of content if the content is good enough. So I'll support anybody. I don't care. And I'll mention other podcasters. I'll mention other websites. I'll mention other content. I'll help other people. I'll get them servers stood up. I'll help them get domains, because this is a ongoing community effort. Even if they don't know it, they're part of my community and I'm part of theirs.
Preach it, brother. So I guess that I got nothing else to say. You got anything else to add? That's a good final line right there.
I'll just say I miss Eric. Really, really good guy. Hope he has lots of fun. Hope he learns how to properly react to a active shooter scenario, and amongst other things, because he's in training. I really want to thank everyone who supported me to go out to OLF, and I really want to thank everybody who came out to OLF, from Kevin, from John Neustetter, John Miller, and on and on and on, Joe Heck. It was just a really fun time, really good people, and it didn't cost me $3,000, so that's good.
That's always a good thing. As always, I thank you for letting me hang out with you each week. I appreciate you being here, but I'm going to say that's it for this week's episode of the Android App Addicts Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.